With two strides he was there, sweeping me into his arms. "At last," he murmured as he pressed his lips to mine. I was ravenous for his touch. When we finally parted, I gazed up at him, then stepped back, bewildered. "How did you know it was me?" His mouth creased into a grin.
"Your perfume gave you away."
"I must remember that next time I need to skulk about." "But how is it that you're here? The council simply released you?" He sat against the edge of his desk.
"After I convinced them that I'd sealed the horseman into his grave."
"I'm amazed they believed you."
"Oh, trust me, they were skeptical. But after I confessed to sneaking out, robbing the repository, and driving in the blade, I took them to the cemetery and showed them the sword. I have to admit I put on a pretty good act."
He circled his finger around his nose.
"Most people can read this boyish face like a book."
Of course, that brought about a smile. I turned and leaned against the desk, too. "You'd think they'd be awarding you a medal." His eyes widened.
"Ha! You should have seen the magistrate. He was furious. I honestly thought he might arrest me for robbery."
He mashed his chin to his neck and rumbled,
"You should have discussed it with us first, Crane."
I covered my laugh with my hand. "What about the sword? How did they determine it was the right one?"
"By examining the hilt. Even I could see it was the weapon of a madman."
A look of pure admiration then crossed his face.
"Katrina, that must have taken great strength."
But the outcome was more than worth it. I brought my lips to his for another glorious kiss. His eyes slowly opened as I withdrew.
"I have more good news."
I couldn't begin to guess what it was.
"After some persuading, they agreed that if I'm still in possession of my head on Monday, I can go back to teaching. In the church, of course. And only traditional assignments."
The last part was said in another deep-voiced imitation of the magistrate. Relief swept over me. "That's not good news, Ichabod. That's great news. Teaching is not something I'm cut out for." He quirked an eyebrow.
"I love the way you're cut out."
He wrapped me into his arms, warming me from the harsh chill. Which reminded me, "Ichabod, why did you even come here?" He glanced around the room.
"Because there are still so many unanswered questions. I can't stop wondering why the horseman chose me. Why Devonpeck?
Does it even matter now?" He tilted his head.
"Probably not. But still, what's his connection to schoolteachers?"
"Ichabod, you're forgetting Garrett. He was educated at home. I don't think he'd ever set foot in this school. And as far as I know, he barely knew Nicholas."
"I'll always be curious."
Then he looked at me quizzically.
"Now it's your turn. Why are you here?"
That brought me back to the bitter truth. I was searching for my tiny rose.
"Of course. I'd forgotten. Where have you looked?"
I held my palms up. "Everywhere." Then sighing, I asked, "Do you think one of the children could have kept it?"
"No. To them, the money I offered was more valuable than the rose. Not to mention the extra points I promised for their grade. Trust me, they not only cleaned up the mess that day, they rooted through everything."
My heart ached. "I can't leave till I find it."
"Then we'll find it. But let me light a fire first. The cold is making your nose red."
He kissed the tip of it. As he started for the fireplace, I grabbed his arm. "Wait. I haven't thoroughly searched there." I hurried over, knelt, and shoved aside some of the logs. Then I ran my hand along the cobbled floor. There was an unusual amount of debris. Snapped twigs, dirt clods, bird feathers. I'd never seen so much fall through a chimney. As I skimmed across it, something pricked my finger. Ow! I quickly withdrew my hand and examined it. A large splinter had pierced the skin, the wound already livid. Ichabod pulled a handkerchief from his pocket.
"Hold still."
"That's going to be extremely difficult," I said, quaking from the cold.
"Yes, it'd be easier to remove the sliver if my hands weren't shaking, too. I'll light a fire first."
Drops of blood were beginning to form, so I wound his handkerchief around my finger. Once the fire was lit, Ichabod brought over a basin of water. He took my hand, cradling it in his.
"And now, my fair patient?"
I bit my lip as he slid the splinter free. The burning pain was nothing compared to the blood that freely streamed. He dipped the handkerchief in the water and pressed it to the puncture.
"Ah! That water's freezing!"
He tied it on tight.
"Good. It will stop the bleeding faster."
I looked down at the bulky wet bandage. Thank you, doctor. Just when we were leaning in for a kiss, we noticed the air had gone thick and gray. Puffs of dark smoke billowed from the fireplace. Ichabod waved his hand in front of his face.
The chimney's clogged.
I remembered the twigs and feathers.
I think there were birds nesting in there.
I covered my mouth, coughing. Our eyes watered as he went for the broom. Staying clear of the flames, he thrust the handle up into the flue.
There's something blocking it.
He prodded and poked, shielding his nose with his crooked arm.
Ichabod, I can barely breathe. Let's extinguish it and—
Right then, a welter of dead birds and dried sprigs crashed down from the chimney. Ichabod jumped back as the heap struck the hearth. Debris rolled toward us, bringing flaming embers with it. I shot back, keeping my hem raised. While the smoke now rose upward, the room was still filled with a stinging haze. Ichabod stomped out some of the cinders, but I reacted quickly, picking up the basin, pitching the water, and dousing the fire. We both stood back, agape.
What in God's name? I muttered.
There were at least a dozen dead blackbirds cluttering the floor, sticks and vines entangled in their wings.
Now we know what caused the blockage, he said, fanning the musky air.
But how? Why? I looked to him, still astounded. Was this the work of the horsemen? He put his arm around me, drawing me close.
No, this was a man-made nest.
Who would do such a thing?
I don't know, he answered. But I think we'd better leave.
As much as I longed to find that bead, I knew he was right. We made our way through the smoky room and stepped out into the misty air. I inhaled, clearing the smoke from my lungs. He nodded toward my hand.
How was your finger?
My finger? I'd nearly forgotten. I untied the handkerchief to examine it. Swollen. It still bled. He turned the handkerchief over and retied it.
It needs a poultice to prevent infection.
I'll take care of it when I get home. Placing his hands on my cheeks, he leaned down and kissed me, the medicine I truly needed.
I love you, Katrina.
I love you, too. He gazed on me, his eyes soft.
When can we meet again?
After the school day tomorrow. The granary at Bliss. He cocked a brow.
The naming of that property was great foresight on your part.
Then we were entwined again, kissing with passion. I eventually gained my senses and whispered, Ichabod, though it hurts me to leave you, I may well bleed to death. He relaxed into a smile.
Go take care of your finger. I'll see you tomorrow.
And with one last kiss, we parted. Father never said a word about Ichabod at dinner, and I certainly didn't press. I'm sure in some roundabout way he felt sealing the horsemen was yet another attempt by Ichabod to make him look incompetent. He hurriedly chewed his food, then throwing his napkin upon the table, he finally looked my way.
Katrina, I'll need you to take care of all the arrangements for the party.
My jaw dropped. We're still having our harvest party?
Of course, he bellowed, eyes wide. We have much to celebrate.
My dinner became all the tastier.
Chapter 22.
The next day dawned as frigid and damp, yet reminders of icy rooms and tumbled birds could not erase my joy. I reached the granary early, spread out the quilt, and waited. A short time later, I heard Ichabod's footsteps on the stairs. His dark hair glistened from the mist, and his vibrant eyes glimmered, sending a wave of tingles throughout me. He knelt and inspected my bandaged finger.
Is it better?
Much better. Though the children taunted me, saying I sliced it on my sharp tongue.
Ah, yes.
He nodded.
I've heard that you are a most cruel schoolmistress.
I huffed. I certainly can't have them taking advantage of me.
Of course not,
he said, drawing me close.
That's my job.
We kissed for a time, holding, touching, caressing. It was as though nothing existed outside the granary walls. But still, there was something gnawing at me. Ichabod?
Mm-hmm,
he answered, nibbling my ear. Did Elise come to see you? He sat back.
Yes, she came bearing strudel.
And? He shrugged a shoulder.
She told me she was pleased with what I'd done, complimented me on my bravery, and said she looked forward to when I could dine with her family again.
She'll never give up. That was it?
That was it.
I stretched my legs in front of me and scoffed. At least her father informed her of your release. Ichabod teasingly pursed his lips.
I'm beginning to think Baltus doesn't like me. Only because he's stubborn, old-fashioned, and can't accept change.
His eyes softened as they met mine.
Perhaps that is why he keeps you so close.
The thought lingered. Father's dominance toward me had started just after Mother died. Did he really fear losing me?
Regardless, he'd never allow us to be together. Not as long as we remain in the Hollow.
He rolled a lock of my hair in his fingers.
Then let's not remain.
I snapped my eyes to him.
You want to leave?
His never flickered.
Don't you?
I felt so light, I feared I might float away. I placed my hands on his face and drew him into a deep kiss. But within the passion, my mind churned, remembering Martin's scheme.
Ichabod, we need to plan our departure.
He smiled, still drunk from the kiss, and the thought of us leaving, I guess.
We could go now if you'd like.
This second.
What's to stop us?
Plenty. Father's money goes a long way. He'll stop at nothing to bring me back.
He sat a little taller, his face taut. Katrina, don't. We can go halfway around the world if that eases your mind, but I won't spend the rest of my life constantly looking over my shoulder.
But I will. I rolled onto my knees. I'd always be wondering what bounty Father had set. He wrapped his arms around me and pulled me close.
If it'll make you feel safer, then we'll come up with a plan.
I laid my head on his shoulder and closed my eyes. I already know a way. He waited, listening. I have a friend who's recently purchased a ship.
The days leading up to the party were spent in preparation. Our home was overrun with servants who aired linens, buffed wood, and polished silver. The new overseer had arrived, yet Father still spent time away from the house. I kept my nose to the ledgers, budgeting for the affair and seeing to every detail. Father was right. There was much to celebrate. Now, more than ever, I couldn't be seen near Martin's ship. If Father thought I'd escaped with Ichabod, Martin would have nothing to fear. And thank God we no longer needed Peter Bottoms. On the evening of the party, Lita fastened me into a rose taffeta gown. Once my tresses were securely pinned, I powdered my face and bosom and stepped into white brocade slippers. I swept into our great room to check that everything was in place. The fragrance of alabaster roses filled the air. Amber and cream ribbons wound up our banister, and every wall shimmered with flickering candlelight. As always, it was like stepping into a fairy tale. Soon came the first knock at the door. Father and I stood together, greeting the guests as they arrived. As usual, Reverend Bushnell was the first. He spouted pleasantries and praised the Lord for delivering us from our recent nightmare.
Reverend, I did the delivering. You should be praising me.
He was followed by a few members of the council. Even Notary de Graff came, though he was still dressed in mourning clothes. His hand trembled when I took it to thank him for coming. I'd barely finished greeting him when I heard a saucy voice say,
"We got our real school teacher back."
Dirk Jansen.
He glared up at me, his arms firmly crossed over his chest.
The little oaf.
Believe me, Dirk, no one is happier about that than I.
I doubt that,
he countered.
He poked out his tongue, then motioned for his brother Devlin. They pushed past me, tracking their way to the table of sweets. Was it wrong that I'd hoped the pastries would rot his little teeth? As I turned back, Elise stood before me in an ice-blue gown dripping with lace. Her golden hair, pinned up in curls, was adorned with gossamer butterflies, and the glass beads of her necklace twinkled their way down to a delicate jay-feather pendant. My breath caught at the sight of her.
"Elise, you're dazzling!"
How could she afford such splendor? Her smile was as cold as her eyes.
"Thank you. You look quite lovely tonight, too."
"Please," I whispered,
"let's resolve this."
She turned her nose and walked in, ignoring my plea. How regal will she feel when she hears Ichabod and I have run away? A few more villagers arrived, offering compliments and bits of banter. The music had already begun, and laughter floated from our great room. I felt light and uplifted. Then along came Peter Bottoms. Just the sight of him caused my stomach to shrivel. He took my hand and leered with yellow eyes.
"Why, Katrina, you look good enough to eat."
Hot bile rose to my throat. I was tempted to spit it into his face. Thank God this will be the last I'll see of him. "Believe me, Peter, you'd find me quite sour." He leaned close, clicking his mouth.
"I'd still like a taste."
Before I could react, he laughed and walked away. I promptly wiped my hand on my skirt and turned to the next guest. Three more families passed. Then Ichabod approached. I was absolutely agog. His black silk suit and ivory waistcoat fit flawlessly. Every fold of lace on his neckcloth perfect. There was a bluish tinge to his raven wing hair, and his emerald eyes sparkled. My breath hitched at the thought that this delicious creature was all mine. He greeted us with a smile as warm as our hearth. Father's face pinched.
"Well, Crane, you're still in one piece. That risky endeavor paid off for you."
"More preservation than risk," Ichabod said. "And as I see it, it paid off for everyone."
Father's expression held firm.
"Curious, though. I'd never have thought to look in Smet's store, even after Katrina questioned me."
He peered down at me, his eyes dark slits. Ichabod came to my defense. I'd asked her, through our correspondence, if she knew what had become of the confiscated weapons. I'm just grateful the sword was there.
"All in all," Father said, "I hope you've learned your lesson."
A vein in Ichabod's jaw pulsed.
"And which lesson would that be?" "You can't mock God with all this progressive thought. It leads to no good end."
Father bit each word as it rolled from his mouth. Ichabod clapped him on the back.
"Sound advice, Baltus. I'll advise President Washington."
Knowing we were leaving had made him beyond brave. Now it was Father's jaw that tightened. Ichabod quickly stepped forward and took my hand.
"Katrina, you are absolutely radiant this evening."
"Thank you, Ichabod," I said, a thousand tingles feathering through me. "That was most kind of you to say." He discreetly winked before walking away. Over the next several minutes, we welcomed more guests. The display of wigs, plumes, blossoms, and jewels made for a colorful parade, but my eyes kept straying, catching glimpses of Ichabod. It was during one of those musing moments when I heard,
"Katrina."
Martin stood before me. He looked charming in a crimson tailcoat and black breeches, a contrast to his usual sweaty clothes. Every sun-kissed strand of hair was combed, and he smelled of toilet water. "Martin, I'm so glad you've come." Then, in a near whisper, I said, "We must speak." His eyebrows dipped and his eyes lit, warning me to stay quiet.
"You know I wouldn't miss it."
With a smile, he added,
"I'll see you inside."
A few more villagers followed. Then I went about my hostess duties. My eye was continually on the spread of luscious pastries across the room. When I finally made it to the table, I was weighed with a major decision. Cranberry or lemon tart? An arm reached around, offering me a glass of brandy punch.
"It appears our ship's captain is in attendance," Ichabod said softly in my ear.
"Shh." I took the glass. "I'll speak with him later, when everyone's too tipsy to notice." I took a sip of the tangy drink.
"Good."
Then Ichabod quirked a brow.
"What happens if you become too tipsy? Believe me, you do not want to witness that."
He snorted a laugh. I nudged him with my elbow. "What?"
"Nothing."
His crooked smile was both devilish and adorable.
"I was just wondering if you become a stumbling drunk or a besotted braggart."
"Neither." I took another small sip. "I recite naughty limericks and talk to the curtains." He sputtered the drink in his mouth.
"Now there's the Katrina I really want to see."
I held up my glass. "Just promise you'll stop me when I start slurring my words." We were interrupted when Clive Van Helt, Vincent's father, staggered over. He appeared to have started celebrating before his arrival. He reached out and poked my arm with his calloused finger.
I thought you'd like to know that Vincent enjoyed having you as his teacher. He spoke about you a lot.
That caught me by surprise. I was truly flattered. Thank you. That's very kind. He is an industrious student, and one I'm extremely grateful to. Clive then cut his eyes to Ichabod.
Well, Crane, seems we've had similar undertakings.
Oh, yes, Ichabod said.
I'd heard about that. The ghost of the old trapper.
Clive poked Ichabod's arm, too.
You should have come to me for some advice. You could have bungled the whole thing.
Ichabod remained calm.
I apologize. The next time I need to seal a ghost, I'll certainly consult with you first.
Clive took a swig from a whiskey bottle that didn't come from our store.
You young folk think you're so smart. Think you know everything about everything.
Now I knew where Vincent got his gall. Ichabod whispered to me from the corner of his mouth.
Please tell me you don't become like this. What you saying there?
Van Helt wheezed.
Nothing. I'm just thankful that it all worked out in the end.
He poked Ichabod's arm again.
I should probably go out to that grave for an inspection.
And while you're there, Ichabod poked him back. Feel free to redo it.
He then drew my hand to his lips and kissed it.
Katrina, it's so lovely to see you. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm sure there are other parents waiting to reprimand me.
I motioned to the table. Please, Mr. Van Helt, help yourself. I dodged around him and wandered away. I spotted Elise across the room, standing with her mother. This may be a mistake, but... I weaved my way through to them. I first addressed Mrs. Jansen, an older, more worn version of Elise. I hope you're enjoying yourself. She gave me a broad smile.
Katrina! These parties are always so lovely.
At least her mother hadn't turned on me. Then to Elise. And you?
It's nice. Though I've noticed that you're short a guest.
Oh? I skimmed the room. Brom. I haven't seen Brom tonight. She dallied with her feather pendant. He never misses your parties. I'm sure you've heard that Brom is no longer our overseer.
And no longer seen, she snipped. I wonder what's driven him away.
I gently gripped her arm and took her aside. Let's not play these ridiculous games. She glared at me, her eyes blue fire.
I'm playing games?
You snake! You knew how I felt about Ichabod, and you tromped right over me.
I did nothing of the sort.
Her nostrils flared.
He was sweet and good to me. But then there you were, all over him, kissing out in the open where anyone could see.
How dare she?
I've never kissed Ichabod in public. I didn't say in public, you ass. I said in the open, by the brook.
Her teeth ground deep.
Did you not think for a second that someone might see you?
I stepped back, aghast, as it all became clear. It was you. You're the one who destroyed the schoolhouse that day.
Can you blame me? I went there with word from my father. He was going to lend Ichabod equipment for the cellar floor. Your horse was there.
She poked her finger to my shoulder.
But you were not. It enraged me when I saw the two of you together.
I shoved her hand away.
Then you should have confronted me instead of turning into a spoilt child. You ruined pottery and schoolbooks and furniture. What on earth were you thinking?
That it was your hair I was ripping instead of pages. In turn, I poked a finger into her shoulder.
And I suppose it was you who clogged the chimney with dead birds.
She stepped back, her mouth open.
You know about the birds?
Only after a fire was lit. Was burning down the schoolhouse part of your revenge as well? She rose a little taller, finding composure.
Hardly. I did that after the school was marked.
After?
Elise, that's madness.
She threw up her hands.
No, Cat, not madness. Love. If you'd paid attention, you would have seen bird feathers lining the doorway and window sills, too.
I did remember seeing them as I'd entered. I still don't understand. Why?
To remove the horseman's mark. I love Ichabod. I only meant to keep him safe.
I couldn't fault her for that.
And you risked going to the schoolhouse alone?
Oh, forget it,
she spat.
You probably think it's superstition.
No, I think it's witchcraft.
At least I took measures. What have you done to ensure his safety?
Broke into the courthouse, stole from the weapons store, and risked a trip to the horseman's grave to seal him with his own sword.
I burned with anger.
You have deluded yourself into thinking that there's something romantic between Ichabod and yourself. That has never been the case. But it might have been, had you not interfered, you spiteful minx.
And now you resort to name-calling. I wanted to fling my brandy right into her face. I am truly at a loss, Elise. I don't know what you expect me to do.
Spin your treasured globe, point to a destination, and leave!
Before I could counter, she turned and stormed away. Tears filled my eyes, and I was helpless to control them. I hurried to the staircase, meaning to hide in my room to regain composure, but I had the misfortune of passing Henny, who was captivating a small crowd with one of her tales.
"Oh, Katrina!"
she called as I tried to slip through.
"Come, come!"
I sniffled back tears.
"Henny, we were just discussing our wonderful schoolmaster. That young man is the embodiment of bravery."
"Yes, he's quite noble. Now, if you'll excuse—"
"Noble?"
She slapped her meaty hand to her chest.
"Positively fearless!"
There was a great nodding of heads following that statement. Henny pursed her lips.
"Did he tell you of his encounter with the horseman?"
"Oh, dear." "No," I said, blinking away the tears in my eyes. "I don't recall him relaying that story."
"What?"
Her face opened in astonishment.
"Why, I would not be surprised if he wrote about it for publication. A tale far more enthralling than any fiction."
And yet I knew what I was about to hear would be fiction indeed.
"You see," she began, "he came to know of the Hessian sword by way of a dream."
"A dream, you say?" I found that a bit of a compliment, considering I was that dream.
"Yes, it was relayed to me that he dreamt of the sword as a glowing hot blade shining brighter than the sun."
I mocked surprise. "It's a wonder he didn't have to shield his eyes." She clucked.
"Remember, Katrina, it was a dream."
"Of course."
"Knowing that Smet had pilfered that sword, Ichabod devised a plan to save us all from that abominable spirit."
"Well, he is quite cunning."
"Oh, more than that,"
Henny praised.
"He not only managed to recover the sword, but chose the witching hour to carry out his task."
I twitched my mouth as though curious.
"Interesting that he didn't wait till the safety of dawn." "Not our courageous Ichabod! He set out to finish that demon once and for all."
Henny took a deep breath, most likely to spew the rest of the story in one uninterrupted exhale.
"He stood by that grave and waited. In a matter of minutes, the Hessian was there. It was a vicious battle, but in the end, our fearless Ichabod prevailed, slicing through the horseman with the fiend's own sword, then driving the blade into the grave. He sealed him in forever. Bless him and his immeasurable courage."
"Yes, we are blessed to have him." It was then that Ichabod sauntered over,
no doubt to rescue me.
"Ladies?"
"Oh, Mr. Crane!"
Henny said, crossing her hands to her heart.
"We are indebted to you for your daring deed."
"Well," he shrugged, "it was a deed that needed doing."
"Indeed."
"Katrina," he said, taking my hand, "would you honor me with a dance?"
"Of course." At last I was freed.
He nodded toward Henny's assembly.
"If you'll excuse us."
We took to the middle of the floor.
We'd barely danced two steps when he said,
"Something's upset you."
I shook my head.
"It's nothing."
"No, it's something."
He peered into my eyes. "Really, forget it."
"Forgotten."
He spun me around and brought me back.
"So, what will it take to make you smile?"
I chewed at my lip as though contemplating.
"It's hard to say, especially since I'm not ticklish."
His warm breath brushed me when he let out a sigh.
You'll always hold that over me, won't you?
You can count on it. I broke into the smile he was longing to see.
That's better.
He leaned closer.
This is a party, Katrina.
He spun me again.
Have fun.
I didn't hesitate to heed his advice. As the night progressed, the spirits flowed. The more drink consumed, the more everyone enjoyed themselves. There were all manner of circle and folk dances. We partook in several parlor games, and I played a couple of songs on the pianoforte, accompanied by the quartet of musicians. Near midnight, the witching hour, as Henny would call it, the festivities had not ceased. The fiddlers sawed the strings, and the music stayed wonderfully fast and uplifting. Twice I'd looked for Martin, but he was always within a crowd or drinking with Peter. But I could not let the night end without speaking to him. I brazenly grabbed his hand and pulled him onto the floor. "Dance with me." He'd never cared for dancing, but he was inebriated enough not to object. "Martin," I said, once we were amid the stumbling mass, "how much longer?" He kept his voice low.
"So you haven't changed your mind?"
"No, I haven't, but there is a new hitch."
"No, Katrina. Everything must go as originally planned."
He glanced at Peter, who'd cornered a young woman against the wall.
"Forget about Peter," I said. "We won't need him."
Martin's face darkened as he clutched my arm.
"Katrina, listen to me. Terms are set. We cannot change them."
"But, Martin, you don't understand."
His grip tightened. "No, you don't underst-" That was when the window exploded with a thunderous crash. Shards of glass showered as a flaming log burst through, landing at our feet.
"Martin!" He wrapped his arms around me and jerked me away. There were yelps and gasps from the crowd. People scattered. The musicians leapt from their chairs. Three men pitched forward to stomp it out, but it was still kindling when another log shattered the next window and hit the floor.
"What the devil?"
Father roared. As more men rushed over to beat out the flames, a shovelful of hot cinders flew in, skittering next to them. The shrieking and howling of guests pierced the room. Caspar Jansen peered out the window, then stumbled back.
"It's the horseman! He's returned!"
My heart thrummed.
"That's not possible!"
"What should we do?"
someone shouted. Martin kept a tight hold on me, attempting to block me from danger. Heat and smoke choked the air. Another window smashed as more burning wood and coals flew in. The crowd grew chaotic, wailing, crying, and shouting. Some rushed the stairs seeking refuge, but a fireball blasted through, hitting the steps and setting the decorative trim ablaze. Burning cinders skittered under Gertie Maris's skirt as she cradled her infant son. Her hem ignited, blue flame gobbling her dress. She held her child out to the frantic crowd.
"Take my baby! Please! Someone take my baby!"
Ichabod was among the many who came forward to help. People cowered in corners and under tables, some scattered to the inner parts of our home. Efforts were made to extinguish the flames, but as soon as one fire was snuffed, the horseman would launch another blazing missile.
"Someone do something!"
the magistrate ordered. Father turned to him, disgruntled.
"A bloody suggestion would be nice."
Peter Bottom stumbled forward, a fierce glower in his eyes.
"We all know what he wants."
Then he shifted his gaze to Ichabod, who was beating hot coals with his silk coat.
"It's true!" Caspar Jansen shouted. "He wants Crane!"
The horseman made another pass, his outline visible among the torches.
"Deliver him!"
Clive Van Helt cried.
"Before the Hessian takes us all!"
"No!" I screamed, struggling to break Martin's grip. Caspar ground a cinder with his heel.
"Send him out!"
Then the lynching began. A crowd descended upon Ichabod, grabbing his arms and legs. He flailed and fought, but there were too many. I shoved my way out of Martin's hold.
"No!"
Father slammed his fist to the wall.
"Are you all mad? We cannot offer this man up as sacrifice."
But the drunken villagers were heedless. I rushed them, pounding and kicking.
"Let him go!"
They pushed toward the front door, dragging and shoving Ichabod as the horsemen still cast cinders inside. The magistrate stomped his foot.
Order! Let there be order!
No one complied. Father scrambled to block the way, but was shoved upon the hearth. His head thwacked against the brick, splitting his scalp and sending sheets of blood streaming down his face.
Father!
I ran to his aid, cradling him as he bled onto my dress. The magistrate, now in a frenzy, shouted,
How is sending this man to his death going to help us? What guarantee do we have that the horseman will be appeased?
But those determined to have Ichabod butchered would not hear a word. Notary de Graff hurried over to me with napkins in his hands.
Katrina,
he said, pressing one of them to Father's head.
Don't let them do this.
I grabbed the fireplace fork and charged, swinging, pounding, and thrusting. One man, named Dathan, pulled it from me and shoved me to the ground. Martin ran to assist me, then, with one solid blow, bloodied the man's nose. The brawl continued, as many of Ichabod's defenders stormed forward to barricade the door. But I feared the mob were too many. I looked around for something. Anything. Elise huddled behind a table, whimpering.
Please, Elise, please, help me. I can't,
she sobbed, her gown clutched within her fists.
I cannot go against my father.
I raced back into the revolt, pulling and tugging. Ichabod still struggled, teeth gritted. Our eyes met, and he cried,
Katrina! Dear God!
Casper, who clutched one of Ichabod's sleeves, yelled to me,
Move out of the way! We won't let you through,
the magistrate held.
Then we'll toss him out the window!
They shifted direction, traversing the room. I flew to the kitchen in search of a weapon, my heart slamming against my chest. Simon, as though by accident, knocked a large cleaver off the sideboard close to my feet. I snatched it up and ran back. They continued to trudge, dragging Ichabod through the cinders and glass, but I streamed around them, standing at the window with the cleaver held high.
Let him go, or I'll chop all your heads off myself!
Move out of the way, Katrina!
Peter Bottoms ordered in a drunken slur. He grabbed for me, but I brought the razor-sharp blade down on his shoulder. I wasn't strong enough to sink it, but it sliced through his shirt, sending a spray of blood from the slash. He buckled, then reached for the cleaver, trying to wrest it from my hands.
No!
The Reverend pressed in, holding up a Bible.
Stop this ungodly behavior now!
But they struck him and shoved him aside. Peter continued battling for the cleaver. Though I held strong, it finally popped from my grip, sending me stumbling back, nearly toppling out the window. They would have tossed Ichabod right on top of me, leaving both our fates to the horsemen. Just when I thought there was no hope, Father stepped up, a rag tied to his head, and a musket aimed at the crowd.
Stop! I will not stand for this in my home! Release him at once!
The room went silent. The lynching ceased. No one wanted to chance a bullet. Ichabod shoved out of their hold. He slumped against a wall, panting. His hair was disheveled, his shirt sleeve ripped. The top button was missing from his waistcoat, and the second one dangled from its thread. The Reverend rose from the floor.
He's gone.
We all turned to the window.
The horseman is gone, he repeated.
I rushed to Ichabod, throwing my arms around him, both of us trembling. The magistrate took charge.
Now, let's see if we can manage some decorum.
He held up a finger, glancing around.
Baltus, how badly are you hurt?
Father wavered and sat. He still clutched the musket tight.
I'm fine, Harding. But check on Peter there.
I had sliced deeper into Peter's shoulder than I'd thought. He held his coat to the wound, but blood still splattered onto the floor. His eyes bled hatred as he narrowed them toward me. I looked around for Martin, but he seemed to have disappeared. Martin, where have you gone? Dr. Goodwine examined Peter's wound.
He will require stitches. I'll need sewing notions.
Father called for Simon to fetch him.
And show Gertie to my room to find a dress among my wife's things. Get some salve for her legs.
Gertie, dressed in a tablecloth and clutching her child, sobbed as he led her away. The magistrate turned back to Father.
This is your home, Baltus. What do you intend we do?
Father looked around at the whimpering wives and children.
"We'll gather in the common room."
Most of the throng had now dispersed, looking guilty and shamefaced. Once we settled back, the council, without Caspar, took charge of the situation.
"It's quite evident," the magistrate said, "that Crane failed in his task to seal the horsemen."
"Or likely he used the wrong sword,"
the reverend added. I buried my face on Ichabod's shoulder. All this was because of me. I had risked everyone's lives.
"Either case," the magistrate continued, "it is my duty to ensure the safety of the Hollow. Nobody leaves this house before dawn."
No one argued.
"Come morning, we'll place Crane in a secure spot. It's apparent that the horseman has a grievance with him."
I snapped my head toward him.
"Grievance? You make it sound like they simply quarreled."
"Hush, Katrina," Father said.
He was too weak and weary to bark. Ichabod laced his fingers through mine to calm me. The magistrate shook his head.
"This much we know. As long as Ichabod is safe, so are we. The horseman has marked him. The ghost will not take vengeance on any of us until he's taken Crane's head. That's why it's in our best interest to keep this man alive."
"And where will you take him?"
the notary asked.
"Don't worry,"
the magistrate answered.
"There is one place where the horsemen can't reach him."
He waved us off after that, concluding,
"Now, I recommend we spend these next few hours making peace amongst ourselves. It's the only way we'll survive."
I reached up and stroked Ichabod's face. I have never been so terrified in my life.
"Nor I."
There was still fear within his eyes.
"I should have taken my chances with the horsemen."
"Ichabod," I whispered. "What are we going to do?" He worried the dangling button.
"I don't know. But for now, I'm trapped. These men will never let me leave."
At first cockcrow, there was a stirring. Everyone gathered their things. The reverend held up his hand for attention.
"Church services will still be held, but moved until 2 this afternoon. I suggest you all attend."
The guests left in groups. Little was said. No goodbyes or expressions of gratitude, and the few apologies uttered were to the council, not Ichabod. When most everyone had gone, the magistrate said,
"Come on, Crane, let's get you to safety."
Ichabod made no attempt to resist.
"Where are you taking him?"
I asked.
"For the sake of the Hollow, it's best we not divulge that."
"But this is wrong. You can't make him a prisoner again."
Father managed to step in, his face haggard and gray. The blood-stained bandages were peeling, revealing the severity of his wound. It was stomach-clenching.
"Katrina, you will not stand in the way of the magistrate."
I threw my arms around Ichabod's neck and whispered,
"I will find you, I promise."
He closed his eyes, breathing in my voice. I watched, helpless, as they escorted him out. He walked like a man condemned. When he mounted his horse, I thought, "Ride away, Ichabod, ride away now." But no matter how much I willed it, I knew that he would not. The dawn shed its light on the disaster that was our home. We were accustomed to the clutter and mess that followed our yearly parties, but what I laid eyes upon looked more like the aftermath of war. Scorched planks, shattered glass, and the russet stains of blood, all encased within a fetid stench of smoke, like that caught in the schoolhouse by the barrier of dead birds. The windows, now gaping mouths of broken teeth, breathed the outside frost. I welcomed the chill as a reminder that I could still feel something. Carefully stepping through the debris, I closed the remaining curtains. It was our only defense against exposure until the slaves brought boards and nails. Every inch of me ached as I trudged to my room. Will this dark cloud ever disperse? Exhaustion finally overcame me, and I fell into a dead sleep.
Chapter 23.
Over the next 2 days, I budgeted for repairs while Father saw to the farm. Our newly arrived overseer had fled back to Chippewa, Who could blame him? I worried for Father. His ghastly wound was now a livid lump, the color of egg yolks and chicken livers. The gash within it had crusted over with a prickly maroon scab. It turned my stomach every time I doctored it. And it was causing him headaches, I could tell. And of course, my mind was continually on Ichabod. What place in the hollow was safe from the horseman's reach? I considered having Lita deliver a note to Henny, the one person who may have wrangled the information, but that would prove too risky. I was sure she had already concocted stories of a lurid affair between Ichabod and me. The query would only add kindling to the fire. I'd have to figure another way. My first real hope came on Thursday. Reverend Bushnell had been invited to dinner. He knew where Ichabod was being kept, and I'd find a way to wring it out of him. After grace, Father picked up his spoon.
"Reverend, I again offer my humblest apology for the chaos last Saturday."
The Reverend lifted a hand.
"No need, Baltus. It was no fault of yours. But had I known the horseman was not restrained, I would never have..."
His words trailed off as though he no longer had the strength to speak them.
"Do not concern yourself. As it is, we are now somewhat skeptical of the whole business."
"Which business?"
Father asked, his spoon trembling in his hand. Reverend Bushnell cast his eyes to me.
"How Crane was able to slip away undetected and carry out the sealing process. There was no real proof that it was the correct sword. We now think it was just a ploy of desperation. A way to free himself from those whose only motive was to protect him."
I met his gaze, chin high. "Reverend, how would you like being kept under lock and key?"
"Oh, don't misjudge my remarks, Katrina. The inconvenience of his circumstance has not been taken lightly."
Father blew steam from his stew.
"So you think Crane took some random sword as a ruse to mislead us?"
"No,"
the Reverend answered, keeping his eyes on me.
"He most likely believed it was the true sword. After all, it certainly looked like the weapon of a bloodthirsty Hessian. No, I think there was more at play here."
I was on to his roundabout accusations, and met his challenge. "What more could be at play?" His lips curled into a sly smile.
"Perhaps you can tell me. You were corresponding with him during that time. Did he not tell you of his plan?"
"He knows." "Did you not read our correspondence yourself? Surely the council was keeping a close watch." He sank his spoon into his bowl.
"Admittedly, I did go over the exchanged lessons, but only in the interest of the children."
"Since you saw what was exchanged between Ichabod and me, you know that he relayed no plan to me of sealing the horseman in." The Reverend chased a pea around in his stew.
"Regardless, it was a good plan. I remember you asking me if such a thing would work."
"And I remember you affirming that it would. What a shame that it was not the real sword, especially since it looked like, as you put it, the weapon of a bloodthirsty Hessian." He nodded.
"But there are so many swords in that stockpile. How could one possibly know the difference?"
"Well, perhaps we should stab them all into the grave. That should finish him." Father kept his faded eyes on his bowl.
"A valid suggestion."
"And," I added, "Ichabod should be the one to drive them in. After all, his head is the one at stake here." The Reverend waved it off.
"There is no proof that the Hessian sword is even there."
"And no proof that it isn't. Who was it that bothered burying the German devil?" The Reverend's agitation grew.
"Katrina, you were but a babe during the Revolution. You have no idea the anguish and bedlam that took place."
"Oh, trust me, I know a great deal about anguish."
"At any rate, we will never know who dug that grave, but it was most assuredly someone who abhorred the British and their tactic of recruiting rogue soldiers. Quite unlikely that it was Smet."
"Still," I said, "the old hermit might have pilfered the sword beforehand." The Reverend's hard huff mingled with steam on his stew.
"Katrina, the entire hollow knows you have a vested interest and are quite anxious to resolve this. As we all are."
Father suddenly found his voice.
"Then let's resolve it. Tell the council we'll meet at the church on Saturday.
Fine, the Reverend said, slurping his meal.
I made no further snaps, but listened closely for any hints as to where they'd hidden Ichabod. When it was time for the Reverend to leave, I helped him on with his overcoat.
Where are they keeping him?
I whispered as he slipped one arm through. He heaved his other one in.
Katrina, I cannot divulge that information.
But you know that it was I who attempted to seal the grave, not Ichabod. Therefore you must also know that I am desperate to free him. He uttered a small laugh.
Oh, yes. It is your desperation that I fear most. What other extremes might you employ?
I will do whatever it takes,
I assured him.
Even at the risk of endangering the Hollow?
Reverend, there is another way to keep me out of your hair.
He smiled, amused.
Now that's a suggestion I'm anxious to hear.
I moved in close. Marry me to Ichabod, so that I may hide with him. His eyes bloomed, and his jaw dropped.
Without your father's consent? That's preposterous.
Please, I beg you.
He wrapped his scarf around his neck.
Believe me, Katrina, if I could do it, I would. Crane is just as bullheaded as you. The two of you belong together.
You'll not even consider it?
No, he huffed. Out of the question.
Had I really expected he would? Can I at least send a message to him? He placed his hands on my shoulders.
It's best that there be no written exchange between you for the time being.
Then will you deliver a verbal message?
He sighed, waiting.
Tell him that I hope he finds at least one grain of happiness in his cruel situation. He straightened his hat.
That seems harmless enough.
You're forgetting, Reverend. I'm not the one who means him harm.
Chapter 24.
I kept hope that the council would come to some decision, find some method to blast the horsemen back to hell. When Saturday did arrive, I could barely think. They couldn't possibly adjourn without something substantial. Simon came into the kitchen after running errands in town. It was far too early for dinner, yet he remained, finding ways to busy himself, and there was a certain restlessness about him.
How are you today, Miss Katrina?
I rested my forehead against my fingers.
As well as can be expected.
Would you like me to make you some tea?
I peeked up, now curious about his motive to linger.
Yes, that'd be nice. I watched as he dallied with the kettle.
Sensing he had something to say, I asked, How were things in town?
He shrugged in a so-so manner.
Just the same, I suppose. Lots of talk and such. I always hear some of the oddest things when I'm there.
Odd? Tell me, what did you hear today?
He set the kettle on the stove.
It's not my place to gossip.
Again there was a bridge of silence, as though he needed permission.
Please, what did you hear?
He picked up a cloth and began wiping down our spotless sideboard.
Seems like there was a brawl at the tavern last night. The fellow that caused it went crazy wild. Tore up the place.
Has Brom returned? I scoffed.
Oh, no, ma'am. It wasn't him. I didn't catch the man's name.
I picked up the tea canister and walked next to him. I hope this nameless man took some of that rage out on Peter Bottoms and beat that vulgar sneer off his face.
I don't know about that. Simon continued. But the curious part is they didn't arrest that man. They just sent him on home.
That was curious. Why didn't they arrest him?
That's the oddest part. It turns out there was already somebody in the jail.
Was there any reason they couldn't have tossed him in with the other prisoner? He stopped wiping and gazed past me.
I thought that too, but I heard they wouldn't have none of it.
He then turned his deep eyes to mine.
Makes you wonder who's occupying that jail, now don't it?
Our gaze held.
Oh, my sweet, wonderful Simon! I plopped the canister onto the sideboard.
On second thought, I think I'll wait until later for tea. His lips curved into a thin crescent.
Yes, ma'am. Is there anything else you need me to do?
I gave his hand a squeeze.
No, Simon. You've done more than enough.
Sweeping on my cloak, I hastened to my horse. I didn't care who saw me, and to what consequence. I spurred Dewdrop into a winged gallop, and did not slow until I'd reached the magistrate's court. I pushed inside, marching straight to the jail. The jailer, a rangy lizard named Fallon, stepped in front of me, blocking my entry.
"Move out of my way,"
I ordered. He remained stiff.
"The prisoner is not allowed visitors."
I slipped off my gloves.
"Prisoner? Is that what you're calling him?"
He puffed his chest, as though that should intimidate me.
"You have no business here."
"I am going through," I said.
"And you won't stop me." The blacks of his eyes shrunk to beads.
"You think I can't?"
I met his glare with equal measure.
"I think you're forgetting something extremely important. My name is Katrina Van Tassel. My father is Baltus Van Tassel. Our wealth keeps this village alive, and if I'm not mistaken, pays your wages."
He flinched, blinking.
"I will have to notify the magistrate about this."
"Go ahead."
I nodded toward the door.
"He is presently at the church with the other councilmen. I'm sure you can still catch him."
Fallon seethed, practically breathing smoke.
"Now let me through."
"Fine," he said. "But you'll get no key."
"Not yet," I muttered as I hurried past. Ichabod lay on a cot, his journal and pencil in hand.
"Katrina!"
He flung them aside and rushed to the bars. We caressed each other as best we could. He kissed my hands and fingers, then reached through the bars, placing his palms to my cheeks. I placed mine on his, the bars too thick for our lips to meet. His mouth creased into a smile.
"What took you so long?"
My heart ached. "Ichabod, what have they done to you?" He drew his hands in and gestured.
"Take a look."
For the first time, I saw his cell instead of him. I blinked surprise. They had dressed it up nicely. He was afforded a writing desk, chair, goose quills, a sheaf of paper, basins, quilts, and a large, comfortable feather bed. I then gazed up at the small barred window just under the ceiling, the pane shut tight. "No fresh air?"
"Believe me, it's best closed."
I remembered the ghastly stink of the narrow alley beyond it.
"So?"
he said, his eyes playful.
"What do you think of my new quarters?"
"I'm certainly relieved. I feared they had you in shackles." His fingers swept across my cheek.
"They do."
His touch only deepened my anger at the council. "Ichabod, this is outrageous."
"Well, they are right about one thing. The horsemen can't touch me here."
"Nor I, not in the way I wish." The desire gripped me. He braved a smile.
"So our fates are in the collective knowledge of the council, and yet my optimism isn't raised."
I clutched his hands. "Ichabod, I intend to free you."
"I'd put my faith in you before them, but I don't know how you can. And Fallon would swallow the key before turning it over."
"Perhaps I could slip some type of sleeping draught into his cider," he chuckled.
"He's rarely alone during the day, and at night I'm protected by two guards. I think they'd grow suspicious if you were to show up with a jug."
I squeezed his hands tighter. "Then I'll find some way to stop the horseman myself." He rested his forehead against the bars. I placed mine on the other side.
"Katrina,"
he whispered, his voice grave.
"I know how you think. Please don't do anything to endanger yourself."
"If you know how I think, then you know I'll stop at nothing."
"Just promise me you'll not do anything rash. You've taken a huge risk for me already."
I closed my eyes, feeling his warm breath on my face.
"Katrina, promise me."
I could not. "I can only promise that I will find a way to end this." He sighed, concern glistening in his eyes.
"Whatever will I do with you?"
We held each other as best we could. How unfair. The victim being jailed. And though it was risky for me to linger, I could not tear myself away. It wasn't long before the courthouse door opened, and we heard mumbling through the wall. We still held hands as Magistrate Harding stepped into the jail room. He looked neither angry nor disappointed. He simply gazed, blank-faced.
"Does your father know you're here?"
"No," I answered, trying to keep my voice calm. "Are you going to tell him?" He didn't.